And we're holding on Chof Zion on with Bays. Let's see. Four lines from the bottom. We started talking yesterday about the concept of Ovid Inish Dina Lanafshe, that a person that when a person has somebody else is doing something where it's clear to him, it's clear to the first person that the second one is violating his rights, then he's entitled to take action for himself rather than have to wait until he goes to Beis Din. We say actually where there's a loss involved, then for sure he's allowed to. Everybody would agree with that. When there's no immediate loss involved right now, then we had a machlokes. Rabbi Yehuda said, since there's no immediate loss, then don't do a dinah l'nafshe, just go to Beis Din. Whereas Rabbi Nachman had said that even then you would be allowed to. Ovid inish dinah l'nafshe, you're allowed to execute a din on your own behalf. So the Gemara says, Masiv Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana asks a contradiction on Rav Yehuda. You're telling me that loy ovid inish dinah l'nafshe, that, again, when you have a case where there's not an immediate hefsid, where you can just as well wait until you go to Beis Din, then Rav Yehuda says you're obligated to do that. But a Braisa says, Ben Bag Bag Oimer, don't go into your fellow person's chotzer to take something of yours that's there without his permission. And Rashi says, meaning don't go in there like a ganev, like sneaking in, because then you're going to appear to him like a ganev. What are you doing sneaking around my property? Rather break his teeth, which doesn't mean literally break his teeth. It means sort of like when we have an agadah, the hakesh, you know, means go in forcefully, go in, like you own the place, kind of. The emerloi, and tell the other guy, shali ani noto, I'm taking my thing. So now that shows that ovid inish dinah l'nafshe, according to Rabbi Yehuda's logic, we're talking about over here where there's no hefsid. Because otherwise, if there was a hefsid, then if let's say, for example, the scenario is that the longer that thing stays there, the more it's going to deteriorate, and there's going to be a hefsid, then even Rabbi Yehuda, not only Rabbi Yehuda would allow you to, but Ben Bagbag then wouldn't say, don't go in there in a stealthy way. He would say, go in there however is necessary. If the best way to get it is in a stealthy way, then do that, and if the best way is to go straight in, then do that. The fact that he says Al Tikonis Shaloi Bereshus Shematirah Lukaganov, that indicates that we're talking about, Tosfos says, there's no pseida over here, and yet Ben Bagbag is saying that you can go ahead and do it. So that shows that Ovid Inish Dinah L'Nafshe, even in that kind of case. On the lay, so if you heard the answer to that, what kind of a question is that? Is that a question that you have with you? In other words, do you think that's a valid question? Or Rashi's first explanation. The second explanation is that imcha is a statement with you. In other words, you might as well have kept this question with you. There's no sense in bringing up the question. Ben Bagbag Yichidohu, because Ben Bagbag is a single Tana, and the other Chachamim, we can assume, disagree with him. The very fact that the Braisa quotes it in the name of Ben Bagbag only implies that all the other Chachamim disagree with him. So on the contrary, then, fine, you can't say this Braisa contradicts Rav Nachman. He's entitled to hold like Ben Bagbag, but at least on the contrary, he says, Rav Yehuda to Rav Kahana, this Braisa would be a proof for me, because evidently only Ben Bagbag holds this way. And the Gemara says, Rav Yanai gives a different answer to reconcile it. My Shvur Ashinov Badin. When it says Shvur, when Bagbag says Shvur Ashinov, doesn't mean you go in there as if you're breaking his teeth and it would tell him whether you like it or not, I'm coming in. It means take him to Beis Din. So then in that case, that would also support what Rav Yehuda is saying, that you have to go to Beis Din in such cases. Well, Yehochi, if that's the case, what do you mean Ve'emer Loi? Then why is the Braisa saying you say to him, which implies that it's just between you and him, but Oimrim Loi Mibori Loi? In that case, you would expect the Braisa to use the expression they should say to him, because they, the Beis Din, meaning in other words, you're taking him to Beis Din, you're saying, look, my object is located in your property, therefore you need to give it to me. And Beis Din will decide the case in your favor, and then they'll tell him, well, new, go ahead, return it to him, or let him come in and take it, as the case may be. So then it should say, Ve'omim Loi. Similarly, what do you mean, Shali Ani Noto? What do you mean that the Braisa is saying, tell him, I'm taking mine. Shalohu notum abolei. If we're talking about, according to the Yanai's explanation, that we mean go to Beis Din, then Beis Din is not going to be saying, let me take my thing. They're going to tell him, let him take his thing in third person. So the Gemara says, Kasha, you're right. That's a Kasha on Rav Yanai's answer. It's not a tiyuvda. We could frown for it, but it's true that it would be more straightforward to understand that we're talking about it's just between the two of them. However, that we're talking about that this is only according to Ben Bagbag and the other Chachamim disagree. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma. Let's try to bring another proof. A Braisa says Shur Shaola Agabi Chaveri LaHorgai. If Reuven's Shur is climbing up on top of Shimon's Shur intending to kill him. So the first shur is going crazy and it's attempting to stomp on the other one and kill it. Or Babal attacked and Bashamat Ashalai, the one who owns the ox that's on the bottom goes and pulls his out of the pile over there, the Nuffel Elyon, and then the top one fell down because now there's no bottom one that's standing on, Umes, and it died, Potter. So then the one on the owner of the animal on the bottom is Potter for the death of the top one. So my love Vamur. Shouldn't we assume that the Braisa is talking about even when the top animal is a Mu'ad? Now a Mu'ad, if it does end up killing the animal that's attacking, then he's going to be paying Nezek Shalim. So now in that case, this is a case of Lekup Seder. This is a case where there's no Hefsid involved because as long as there are Edim and the circumstances are clear, then fine, your shur is going to get killed. Okay, you'll go to Beis Din and the guy's going to have to reimburse you for the full value of the shur. So therefore, that's talking about the lekup seda, as the Gemara says, there's no hefsid, and still we're saying you're allowed to. So isn't that an example of it in Ishdin or Nafshe, even when there's no hefsid? Now, to be sure, of course, you know, you could easily draw out a scenario where there are no Edim or where for whatever reason there's going to be other trouble trying to get what's coming to you. Obviously, then there's a hefset involved. Then Rabbi Hoda will agree. But we're talking about over here. The fact is, one of the rules when we learn about this concept of Ovid Inish Din Lanafshe, so we started talking about it yesterday and about some of the criteria. One of the criteria is it has to be that if you were to go to Beis Din, you would have what to substantiate your claims in terms of Edim and in terms of that your claim is clear and so forth. So the Rashba points out, let's say, for example, if there's no Edim, then fine. Even if the top animal is a Mu'ad, you'd be allowed to pull out your animal from underneath it without touching the top animal. As we're going to say in a second, that's a different din. The Smeh points out actually in connection with that din, that even if you don't have Edim, if you're a Tophus, then you can have a Migoy. So here also, if there's no Edim, then also you have a Migoy involved over here. Anyway, the point is, so my lab a Mu'ad. Shouldn't we assume we're talking about even a Mu'ad where you don't stand to lose anything, the Lekup Seda? And the answer is Loi, not necessarily, but Tam, the Ikup Seda. No, we can answer that the Braisa is talking specifically when the top animal, the one that's attacking, is a Tam. Well, then you do stand to lose, because if he kills you, sure, you're only getting Chatzi Nezek. So then that can be quite a loss. So then in that case, true. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that Ovid Inish Dino Nafshe in a case like that. So the Gemara says, Yehochi, well, if that's how you're understanding it, Eima Sefer, then what about look at the end of the Braisa. So the first part of the Braisa said that if he pulls out his shur, so he's not touching the shur on top, he's pulling out his, and the result is that the shur on top falls down. Now we're talking about where he actually pushes off the top one, so now he touched it, umes, and then he died. Chayev, then the top ox died. Chayev, then he's chayev for the injury or the death of the other ox. The ibatama, my chayev. If it's a tam, why should he be chayev? What's the difference? Either way, if he has the right of it inish din lanafshe in order to save his, then what's the difference? After all, he did what he needs to, because otherwise he's going to lose chatzinezin. So Tosfos adds the point, if the top animal is a muad, then you can say, look, it's not such an emergency, because you know you're going to be getting paid back in full because there are edim, or because there are no edim, but you have a migui, et cetera, whatever the exact scenario is, like we just said. So then you have the time instead to pull out yours. But if it's a tam, you would think, why should you be required to pull out yours when you're in a hurry over here? You got to do something fast. Otherwise your shor is going to be killed and you're going to get only chatzi nezek. So therefore, maybe you shouldn't be expected to think of the difference between pulling out yours versus pushing off the other ones. And the answer is no. Even in that case, no, because you could have pulled out the bottom one and you didn't. And therefore, you can be held responsible for the fact that instead you pushed off the top one, and therefore, that makes you chayev in nezek. If the only way, now it does mention in Shulchan Aruch, that if the only way you could have done it, there was no other way other than pushing off the top one, then sure, you're potter. But if you had your choice, a way of shemtoi, where you're, and versus a way of dochtoi, pulling out yours versus pushing the other ones, then we can be mechayev you for that. So this gives us then one of the dinim, as far as Ovid Inish Din HaNafshe, it has to be, is there another equally, as we talked about yesterday, is there another equally easy way to get the thing accomplished without having to damage the other guy's property. Like we talked about yesterday, you know, someone's in your parking space where you have a choice between calling a tow truck to get him out of there versus calling him to tell him to move his car. If he left a number over there, then you have this rule over here that he could have called the other guy and told him to move his car rather than getting it towed and causing the other guy a hazard. Okay. So no proof from this one way or the other against Rav Yehuda, because we're saying that even by a muad, we're saying the Braisa may not be talking about a muad, it may be talking about a tam, and even by a tam though, even though you do stand to suffer a loss, you are responsible to try to find a way to do it first without causing the guy a hazard. Okay, Toshma, let's bring another proof. A Braisa says, "I'm a malei chatzar chaveri kade yain v'kade shemen." If Reuven fills up Shimon's chotzer with jugs of wine or of oil, bala chotzer meshabav v'yotz meshabav v'nichnas, then the owner of the chotzer can break the kalim as he's going in and out. In other words, he's allowed to clear a space for himself, even if that means breaking the other guy's kalim. So now that's not a case of ikapseda. That's not a case of there's a hefsid. So therefore we see Ovid Inish Din HaNafshe. But the Gemara says not a proof, because Omer of Nachman Leitzchak Meshaber V'yotzel Beistin, the Meshaber he's breaking may be that it just means he's allowed to break them when he needs to leave his chotzer to go to Beistin in order to sue the other guy and tell him to get his barrels out of there. Meshaber V'nichnas, and then when he breaks it, comes back in, Lahovi's Choyosev is Beistin will tell him, well, okay, the first thing you need to do is bring a proof that this chotzer belongs to you. Bring your deed or something. So therefore, in that case, then there is a hefsid involved, because without that, he won't be able to take the guy to Beis Din. That doesn't mean that when he's going in and out on a regular basis that he should be allowed to break them. Maybe not necessarily. So now Tosfos points out, it is true that we're not going to require, now in the case of the oxen, we just said we're going to require him to try to pull out his rather than pushing off the other one, if at all possible. Here, we're not going to say that we're going to make him, we're not going to make him do the tircha of stacking the barrels one on top of the other in order to clear a path for himself. So there, he's just allowed to break his way in and out, because to have to stack them up and then clear a path that way would be a bigger tircha. Whereas when it comes to the oxen, the pulling out yours, pushing off the other ones is the same tircha either way. So therefore, again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, not necessarily does that mean that you can break them stam. It means you're breaking them when otherwise there's a hefsid, because otherwise Beis Din is going to tell them you have no way of proving your case. Okay, another one, Tashma. Minayim the nirtza shekolu lo yomav. How do we know when you have an Eved Nirtza, an Eved Ivri, here is one of those rare cases, well, here it doesn't even say the word Eved, but whatever, a Nirtza is an Eved Ivri, who, as we learned in Kedushin, he decided to stay past the 6 years, and he got his ear pierced, and now he stays till Yovel. So an Eved Nirtza, Shekololo Yomav, the time's up, Yovel has come, and it's time for him to go. The rabbi misared by lotzis, and his master is pleading with him and then trying to pressure him to leave. And the Eved's not listening, and he doesn't want to go. The chaval also by chabura, and the master then injured him and caused a wound in him. Show potter. How do we know that in that case the master is potter? Tamad loyma. Therefore, the pasuk says lo sikhu kofer loshu. You should not take a kofer, a ransom, for the one who's going to return. Now, in the simple sense, what the pasuk, the context of the pasuk is talking about, you have a person who killed b'shogeg and has to run away to the Ori Miklat. So the Torah is telling us, don't take a ransom, don't say instead, let him pay money and he'll be potter from that. No, he has to go to the Ori Miklat. However, the Gemara is darshaning. It also means lo sikhu kofer lashav. It means also don't have to give a ransom on behalf of somebody who is shav. Which means Rashi says two possibilities. It means that he wants to return to his degraded state of being an eved, or it can also mean lashav, that he should be shav al mishpachta. The pasuk uses the expression that at yovel he returns to his family and he doesn't want to. So then either way, however we doubt it, the point is the pasuk is saying that don't take a kofer, meaning in other words, based in, should not tell the master, you have to pay this guy for the injury you caused him, because he had every right under these conditions to hit him and try to force him to go. Tosfos actually points out, I mean, you could have, conceivably, this is not necessarily by Nirtze Shekolu Yomav, you could conceivably have it at the end of the 6 years as well, where the master doesn't want to keep him as an Evan anymore, it could be any other time, but whatever, it's talking about that at the end, at the Yovel, because that's the usual time, because look, he's not able to use him as an Evan anymore, so therefore it's more likely for him to tell him, to put pressure on him to get out of there. Anyway, the point is, so this is an example of Ovid Inish Vino Nafshe. According to Rabbi Yehuda's logic, there's no hefsid involved. Why shouldn't the master be taking the Eved to Beis Din? And forcing and Beis Din will force the Eved to leave. So doesn't that show that Ovid Inish Vino Nafshe? So the Gemara says no, because Hocha Mayaskinin Ba'Avda Ganva. No, because you could be talking about over here about a slave who's been stealing from his master. So then there is a hefsid, the fact that he's staying over there. So then even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that Ovid Inish Vino Nafshe. But the Gemara asks, what's the logic? So what's the logic? Till now, the guy hasn't been stealing, and all of a sudden now he's stealing, and all of a sudden now the master considers it an emergency to get him out of there. To be sure, Rishonim point out, the Raiva, the Rashba points out, look, he may have been stealing until now, but on the other hand, the master figures that, look, you know what, it's compensated by the fact that I'm getting work for him, that I'm getting work out of him. Meanwhile, now he's saying, look, I'm not going to be able to get any work out of him, and he's going to continue to steal, then I need him out of here. And so they explain that, he wouldn't have let things slide until now, and second of all, then there's not really that much of a chiddush in it. Obviously, if he's stealing or something like that, then there's a greater chiddush. So the question is then that, so we're saying, in effect, we're learning from the pasuk that only because he's finished working over there, therefore the master can tell him, get out of here, and if not, he's allowed to injure him, but not while he's an eved. Well, the question is, why not? If he was a slave, he should be entitled, if he was a ganav all this time, he should be entitled to, and if not, why all of a sudden is it, what's the logic that all of a sudden he's becoming a ganav? And the answer is maybe, yeah. Until now, he's afraid of his master, so he's afraid to steal. Now he has no more fear of his master, because he figures, I'm free anyway, it's Yovel. So maybe, therefore, he's tactically going to think that now he has an opportunity to steal. So therefore, this could be a case where there is Pseida, where there is loss to the Balabas involved, and therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda holds that he is allowed to hit him, to get him out of there, to save his own property, and then we have this proof from the pasuk for it. So therefore, that's a case where even Rabbi Yehuda would agree over the initial note. Actually, the Gemara gives a different answer. Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak Amar, the Eved Shemosale Rabbi Shifaknanis. What we're talking about over here is specifically where the master gave the Eved a Shifcha Knanis as a temporary wife, which, as we've learned in Kiddushin, he's allowed to do, and then the children will be considered Avadim, and that's a benefit for the master, where he has more Avadim, Knanim, that is. The point is, therefore, ad ka'idna hetera. So up until now, the Eved had every right to live with the shifa, and there was no aveira involved. Vahashta isura. Now it becomes also for him. Once he's no longer an Eved Ivri, then he's also to be with a shifcha knanis, just like any other yid. So now, therefore, when the master is hitting him, we're not just talking about something where he's hitting him in order to save his property. He's actually hitting him in order to prevent him from doing an aveira. That's different. Then there's more of a heter for him to do that. So this is an interesting point that various achronim talk about. Is that in fact the case? You are in fact allowed to hit somebody. The rishonim and achronim talk about. Does that mean that you're allowed to hit another yid to prevent him from doing an aveira? So you have, for example, the Yamshal Shlomer, the Marshal says over here that yes, provided that he says it has to be that you are Muchzik the Kashrus, you're known to be a Yorei Shamayim, then you're allowed to do that, because otherwise, you know, anybody's going to claim that I'm hitting the other guy to prevent him from doing an Aveda. So then the Rosh says, for example, particularly we're talking about if you see that Reuven is chasing after Shimon to hit him, then Levi is allowed to hit Reuven to prevent him. Now you have a case of Roidif that the Gemara talks about, but Roidif is where he's trying to kill him. Then there's no question you're allowed to hit or even kill Reuven if necessary to save Shimon. Here we're talking about where he's only trying to injure him, and the Rosh says this would be an example where Levi is allowed to intervene in order to do that. Interestingly, the Truma Sadeshin says something even more, and the Ramah brings it in Shulchan Aruch. You can have, let's say, so you have a married couple, Reuven and Rochel, and Rochel is regularly cursing Reuven's parents. So the Truma Sadeshin says Reuven would, even though now the Ramah talks about in Shulchan Aruch, a husband is never allowed to hit his wife. It's not something that Jews do, and if he does that regularly, then it's grounds for divorce, and Beis Din can force him to stop doing that. Shows a big difference among the goyim right down to our times, regularly beat their wives. But anyway, here the Ramah says such a thing is not done among Jews. But then he brings a Yesh Oimim, which is this Truma Sadeshin, that let's say the wife is regularly doing aveiros, such as cursing her father's parents, then the husband would have a right in such a case to use physical force to stop her. It's a yesh oimrim. Not everybody agrees to that. Probably better don't try it at home. But there's another example of hitting somebody to prevent him from doing an aveira. But again, you have the Truma Sadeshin at least says it is limiting it to a case where you're responsible for somebody else, for example, a husband for his wife or a master for a slave. The Yamshal Shloimeh is the Marshal is saying more generally, but he's saying that you do have to be a muchzik kashrus in order to do it. Not just anybody can go and hit somebody else and then say I'm doing it in order to get him to stop doing a mitzvah. On top of that, you know, nowadays also you have the Chazon Ish writes in one place in his Sfarim that nowadays you do have to consider, to a certain extent, you have to consider public opinion as well. The world is not going to look at it. They see Reb Reuven beating Shimon in order to get him to stop doing an Aveira. They're not going to think, look at that. Reb Reuven is doing the right thing. They're going to think, Jews and Rabbanim and whatever are a bunch of thugs. So you do have to take that, and that would create a Chilul Hashem. So you do have to take that kind of consideration into consideration as well. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. Toshma, hamaniach sakad b'rishus harabim. If a person puts a jug down in rishus harabim, so now we finally get to our Mishnah, which is why we brought in this whole case of Obed Inish Din Lanafshe. So Reuven puts down a jug in rishus harabim. Uvach of a nikob of a shavra. Somebody else comes and trips over it and breaks it. Potter. So we said that other person, Shimon, is potter. Because as we learned yesterday, we learned the various possibilities. Is it because your person is not expected necessarily to look where he's going? We said according to Rav, we're talking about the whole Rosh Hashanah is full of barrels. According to Shmuel, it was in the dark. According to Rav Yechon, it was around the corner. And according to the Amri B'mar Rava in the name of Rav Ullah, we said in general, people are not expected to look closely where they're going, and therefore you had every right to walk there. Anyway. So time of the nitkaba. So apparently only because he tripped on it is he potter because he couldn't help it? Hashav rachayev, implying that if he broke it, then he would be chayev. Now he'd be chayev for the damages. Now that would not be according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, what's the problem? These barrels are in his way, so Ovid Inish didn't run out. Now Tosfos points out the question primarily would be according to Rav. Rav who says b'mamalev shosadavim kolichavias, that the guy filled up from one end of Rosh Hashanah to the other, he filled it up with barrels, so then there's no other way to go, so then you'd be entitled to break your way through. If the whole Rosh Hashanah was not full of barrels, then no, we're not going to say that you're entitled to do that, just go around. As opposed to, Tosfos says, Chatzar Chavera is one thing. A person has the full rights to his Chatzar, as opposed to a Shusarabim. Fine, let him just go around. Anyway, the point is that the Mishnah seems to be implying that if he broke them, he'd be Chayim. Now, why? So Rav Zvid says in the name of Rava, no, not necessarily. As we learned yesterday, it could even be that when he broke it, he'd be Potter. The reason why the Mishnah mentions the case where he tripped. I did the kabbalim of misnei seifim huzak balabai imahim huzak balabai is chayev b'nizkoi, only because the Mishnah needs to continue with the case where if he got injured by the broken pieces, then the balabai that bal chovis chayev b'nizkoi, then the owner of the chovis is going to be chayev to pay for his damages. Where there, as we learned yesterday, the davka nitkal, that would only apply if he tripped, because then he can say the fact that this burr exists over here, that these broken pieces exist and I got injured, is not my fault in the first place. It's your fault for putting this chavis down in the first place. I will shove our loy, but if he had broken them not, dehu azik nafshe, so because then we can say he caused himself the hezek, because we can tell him you didn't have to break the barrel. You could have put it one on top of the other, or you could have whatever. So therefore, you can be responsible for your own damages. So fine, you're potter for paying for the barrel because of the inish din l'nafshe. But on the other hand, you can't also be mechayev the owner of the barrel for your injuries because you had an alternative way that wouldn't have injured you also. So therefore, you could say katani reishin nitkal. Therefore, because of that, the Mishnah begins by mentioning the case of nitkal. But in fact, maybe even as far as independently, the first din of the Mishnah would work even if he broke them, because of an inish din of an action. So no proof one way or the other. You could say the Mishnah means davka nitkal, and that would show that loy of an inish din of an action, or you could say the Mishnah is just mentioning nitkal in order to be able to introduce the case in the Sefer, and in that case, that would mean that even if he broke it, then the same din would apply, and in that case, of an inish din of an action. Okay, the Gemara says here's another proof. Toshma, let's bring a proof from a Braisa. Now we talked about yesterday the case of the case where two men are fighting and the wife of one of them comes and intervenes. So the pasuk describes two people are fighting. The wife of one of them comes over to intervene. The shocha yada, she sticks out her hand. The echzika b'mavushav, and she grabs him by his private parts. And the pasuk continues. The katsoisa es kapo, you should cut off her hand. Lois socha se nefa, do not have rachmanus. Now we talked yesterday that there are two different. There were actually two different dinim that we're learning from this pasuk. On one level, we're saying the katsoisa es kapla doesn't mean that you actually cut off her hand. It means you make her pay money for the boshes. This is where we learn the concept of paying for boshes. On the other level, we say that the katsoisa es kapla means literally, it means that because she's a roidif, she's attempting to injure the other guy, and therefore you're entitled to, therefore any bystander is entitled to wound her, to prevent her from doing that. Just before, we were talking about a bystander injuring somebody to prevent him from doing an Avera. That was saying maybe, maybe not, depending whether somebody else is, whether, we said the Rosh says, for example, that yeah, if Reuven is intending to hit Shimon, then Levi is allowed to intervene and then even hit Reuven if necessary. So here we're saying, though, we're talking about it's not just intending to hit. What she's attempting to do could actually kill the guy. So therefore, then that's the classic case of a roidif where you're allowed to save him by injuring him, and if necessary, if injuring him won't help, then even kill him. But anyway, a braisa says the katsoisa es kapa mamon. A braisa says that when the posuk says you should chop off her hand, that means that she's paying mamon. It means that she's paying for boshes. So my love, shouldn't we assume that we're talking about where there's no other way for her to save her husband? So in that case, then this would be an example of an inish din or nafshe. It sounds like over here, even when there is a hefset involved, because her husband is going to get injured and there's no other way for her to prevent the other guy from doing it, it sounds like she's not allowed to, and we're going to make her pay for the boshes. So then that would show that loy of an inish din or nafshe. And the answer is loy, not necessarily. She could. The case would be where she could save him in some other way. She doesn't daft have to do that boshes to him. She'd be able to do something else. So in that case, Tosfos points out, it's not even a case of Ovid Inish Din Lanafshe. Ovid Inish Din Lanafshe is, as we've been saying all along, where there is no other way to do it. If there's another equally valid way of doing it, then you can't say Ovid Inish Din Lanafshe. So here we're talking about she could have done it some other way, and therefore we're saying that now if she chooses this way, then she's chayiv in boshes. So the Gemara says, what? So you're telling me then the implication is that in fact, if that was the only way to save her husband from being hit is by causing boshas to the other guy. So you're telling me that what? Ptura? If so, adetani sefer. So now, instead of the braisa continues v'sholcha yada, that the braisa continues when it says she sticks out her hand, prat l'shliach beistin, that comes to exclude the case of a shliach beistin who embarrasses somebody. Namely, let's say you have a person who is the shliach beistin is telling him that he has to come to beistin. He has a summons to beistin, and the guy doesn't want to come. And the shliach beistin then is entitled to do something to him that may even involve boshes, like slapping him or something, to make him come. And he's potter for that boshes. So if you're going to tell me that there's a distinction even between the woman herself, who's not a shliach beistin, between whether she could have saved by some other means or not, then instead of bringing in the case of a shliach based in, the braisa should make a distinction between what she's doing herself. You should say, when do we mean that, when are we saying that she's chayiv in boshes? Only when she could have saved her husband some other way. But if she couldn't have, then she would be potter. So the fact that the braisa didn't make that distinction seems to show that there is no such distinction with her, regardless of whether you chol lahatzalai de'davar achar or not. Either way, she's chayiv for boshes. That would show that loy ovid inish din lanafshe. And the answer is no, because you could say hochi nami kamar. The answer is that no, maybe that's actually what the braisa means. Bamedvar mamurim. When are we saying that she is chayiv? But she chol lahatzalai de'davar achar. When she could have saved her husband in some other way that wouldn't involve boshes to the other guy. But if she can't, then her hand becomes like a shliach based in, and then in fact she's potter. So it's true. The braisa is mentioning the distinction between a shliach based in and not. But in effect, what the braisa is doing is it's saying that when the situation is where she couldn't have done it any other way, then she herself, in effect, becomes a shliach beistin. And therefore, the same way as a shliach beistin is potter, so is she. So in fact, the braisa is making that distinction, according to that way of looking at it, between whether she could have done it some other way or where she could not, and where she couldn't have done it, where she couldn't have done it some other way, then we have ovid inish din lanafshe. Okay. The Gemara says, here's another. Let's try another proof. Toshna. A braisa says, it's a Mishnah in Baba Basra. Suppose that there was a public road passing through the middle of a person's field. Nukla, he decided to take that for himself. He doesn't want his field to be blocked off in the middle by this Rishus Rabim. And we're talking about now how did this happen in the first place? How did this happen in the first place? So you could have, for example, the Rashbam explains there in Baba Basra that we're talking about, you could have to begin with that he originally gave it to them, or you could have just that there's a chazaka that they're going in it. So they can't, if you ask them where exactly do you get that this is a road, they're not going to be able to trace it back, but they know they have a chazaka for many years already of using this road. Anyway, Nukla, so now the owner of the field takes away that road, and instead he gives them a different road that goes along the side of his field, figuring, look, you know, they need to get to their destination. Fine, I'm not going to prevent that, but I'm going to give them a road that's not going to go straight through my field. So the Mishnah says, Masha Nosan Nosan, what he gave them is a valid gift, meaning, in other words, now they have the right to start using that new road. But what he wants to keep for himself doesn't come to him, meaning, in other words, he can't do that either. Both of them now belong to the public, to the Bnei Rosh Hashanah. So the question is, if we assume, so what are we saying? It sounds like the fact that he gave them the new road is chal, because he is giving them a new road. So it sounds like it's almost a case of zenen of zelei choser. So on the face of it, he's entitled to say, look, I'm giving you a road which is just as good for you, and it benefits me because it doesn't go through my property. So therefore, you should have to take that. So on the face of it, it means that the actual new road that he gave them, that is chal. But the question is, why are you saying that the old road he also can't take for himself? Why not? If you're talking about taking them to Beis Din, obviously you can't take every single person to Beis Din and tell them not to trespass. But the amat ovid inish din alanafshe, if you're telling me that he could do the din for himself, what's the problem? Linkit paz revelation. Why shouldn't he have the right to take a stick and sit there by the entrance of the old road, and anyone who wants to go through, tell him, I'm sorry, this road is closed. I've taken it back for myself. Why can't he do that? So we're saying that not. It sounds like loyal the initial din of the nafshe. What are we saying? The only way for him to get this road for himself, the old road, would be to take every single person to Beis Din and tell them that if you go through here and you damage my property, then you're going to have to pay, and eventually people will give up on using it. But it sounds like he can't. It sounds like that's the only way. It sounds like he can't. And practically speaking, since he's not going to be able to do that, then he's going to end up forfeiting the old road as well. But why? According to Ovid Inish Din Lanafshe, he can physically prevent other people from coming in there in the first place, and eventually, therefore, it'll become his. The answer is Amrav Zvid Mishmei Derava Gzeira Shemi Yitin Lahen Derech Akolosin. It's true in principle he could do that because Ovid Inishdin Lanafshe. Here though the Chachamim make a Gzeira because he might take from them a straight road and instead he's going to give them a crooked road. And the Rashbam adds in Baba Basra over there, they may not realize it at first because everybody's going to say that, you know what, it's not my responsibility. It's a public road, so somebody else will take him to Beis Din over that. And in the end, nothing gets done. So because of that is why the Chachamim are saying that so you could have a case where he's actually hurting their interests by giving them a crooked road instead of a straight road they had before. And therefore, that's a reason to prevent him from doing this in the first place, no matter what kind of new road he's giving them, even if he is, in fact, giving them a straight road. Rav Mesharshi, I'm a bit nice on Mahem Derech HaKalosin. Rav Mesharshi says, not a Zeder that he might. We're talking about specifically what is the case over here is where he gave them a Derech HaKalosin. So the difference is, according to Zvid's understanding, means no matter what kind of new road he gave them, always we're going to keep him from taking back over the old road, because he might go, because we're not concerned that in some cases a person might give a crooked road instead. But now, according to the Mishashi, or rather the vote is, if he gives them a crooked road, then he doesn't get to keep the old one. But if he gives them a straight road, then Take is allowed to take back the old one for himself and sit there with a stick and prevent people from coming in. Rav Ashi gives a third answer. Really, in effect, whenever you give them a road from the side, is always considered a crooked road. So therefore, it's not that he might give them a crooked road, he might give them a straight road. After all, the new road is going to be closer for some people, but it's going to be further away from other people. So in other words, it's going to be more convenient for some people, but it's going to be less convenient for other people. So you can say that he doesn't have the right without the reshus of the public to go and then exchange roads, because there can be people who say that in that case this new road is less convenient for me. I wanted the old one instead, and therefore he's causing them a loss and he can't do that. So the Gemara asks, well, if that's the case, then why doesn't he get the new one? If you're telling me that the trade is invalid in the first place because of that, then, uh, then why doesn't he get back? So Rashi has the girsa, if the exchange is no good, then why shaloi lo higiyoi, which is the girsa that we have in front of us in the Gemara, which is a little difficult to understand, because what does Rashi mean by that? If the exchange is not valid, we would say the new road is still belongs to him. Why should he be able to take back the old road? Tosfos, in fact, brings the girsa, that the girsa should, in fact, be ihochi amai mashin nosan nosan amai. Well, then why is it that what he gave them is considered a valid giving? Why don't we say to begin with, we leave everything as it was. They continue using the old road. The new road that he planned to give them, we're going to say, Beis Din is going to tell him that doesn't work because it's going to be less convenient for some people. So fine, you take that back and you keep the old one and we leave things as they were before. Anyway, the Gemara answers, Mishum did Rav Yehuda, because we have to also take into consideration what Rav Yehuda says. The Amr Rav Yehuda makes a Shech Zikubay Rabim a path that Rabin have a chazaka to use, also the kalkaloi, you're not allowed to damage it. So therefore, in other words, we're talking about that people have started using the new road, and therefore already you can't take it away from them. So in other words, that's why. In principle, yes, he should be able to take back the new road, but now that the rabbim started using it, and the Rashbam adds there in Baba Basra, where this Gemara comes from, that we're talking about, that they actually smoothed it out, aired it as a public road, then also the kalkaloi, because he, for sure, he was moichel on it, and over here, even more so, because he gave it to them via dai. You have the question in that case, wasn't a mekach tos, because he wouldn't have given it to them if he knew he's losing both roads. But the Mukha Yosef says that's how it is. They already made the chazaka because with his das. So even though it was the tos, so nevertheless we penalize him because, again, he gave them a derech hakolosin. He gave them a road which is less convenient for some people and more convenient for other people, and therefore we make them lose both of them. And then there's another reason as well. The shittim mukubetzes brings from the Raivet that because anytime you give something to the rabbim, then anybody who's involved with tzorchei rabbim is like osik with tzorchei shamayim. So therefore you have to go beyond the usual rules. You have to consider as though Hashem himself is involved over here, and therefore that's different. Okay, so anyway, so no proof over here about Obed Inish Din Alanafshe, because in fact, it's true, he can't sit over there with a stick and prevent people from coming through, because in this particular case, we're saying that we don't want to do that, because it's going to cause problems for the rabbi. Okay, Toshma, let's bring another proof. A Braisa says, Balabayis Shiniach Peya Mitzad Echad, if a Balabayis left for the poor people on one side of his field, Ubo Anim and not Mitzad Acher, and the Anim came and took from a different side of the field. So the din is Zev Zev Peya, both what they took and what he left to begin with is considered Peya. Now, the Amat Obed Inish Din Lanafshe, if you're telling me that Obed Inish Din Lanafshe, why should they be able to keep? I think I skipped a line before over there by the case of the road. So why doesn't he get back his? Take your road back and leave me the new one that I wanted to give you. And the reason is, because the rabbim have already made a chazak on it, you can't do it. Okay, so yes, so Toshma, Balabayis Shiniach Peya Mitzad Echad, if a Balabayis left Peya on one side of the field, Ubo Aniyim and Nothra Mitzad Acher, and Aniyim came and took from a different side, Zeva Zev Peya, so both of them are considered Peya. The E Amit Ovid Inish Din Lanafshe, if you say Ovid Inish Din Lanafshe, like Rav Nachman, Amai Zev Zev Peya, why are both of them considered Peya? Same thing like we said before, Luke to Pazri Velasiv. Let him take a stick and sit over there, and when any Aniyim come to collect from that other side, let him tell them, sorry, the Peya is on the other side. Don't take from over here. So we see that Lo Yovid Inish Din Lanafshe. The only way would be to take him to Beis Din, and again, practically speaking, he can't take all the Aniyim to Beis Din. So doesn't that show that Loyov and Inishdin are Nafshe? The answer is Omar Rava, not necessarily, because my Zev Zev Peya, because what it might mean, what does the Braisa mean when it says both of them are Peya, doesn't mean that the Aniyim are allowed to collect from either place. It just means the Poitrim and a Maisir. It means that both groups of grain are Potter from Maisir, because one of them is in fact Peya, and the other one is because it's Hefter. Kedetanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. Hamafkir is Karma, if a person declares his vineyard Hefter, v'hishkim b'boker ubotz, right? And then he woke up early in the morning and took it back from Hefker, and he harvested it. Now, we learned back in the Masechta Nedarim that midrabbanan, if a person is going to make something Hefker, he has to do it in front of a couple of other people so they can be edim for it, and therefore it's not necessarily likely that he's going to get it back, but me'ikradin, minatora, he would be able to do it this way, where he declared it Hefker, and then he himself takes it back from Hefker. So then, the din is chayev peret. He's still chayev in this vineyard and in the mitzvah of peret, where individual grapes fall off when he's harvesting a cluster. One or two individual grapes fall off from a cluster, and he has to leave them for the poor people. Over olalos, he has to leave the olalos, the undeveloped clusters of grapes, which have to be left for the poor people. Over shitcho peya, he's also chayev in shitcha and peya in this field. Because even though it was Hefker at one point, nevertheless, now it's not Hefker anymore, and therefore it's still Chayev in Matnas Aniyim. Later on in Masechta, we're going to learn why that is so. Or Potter, Minam Meiser, however, this vineyard will be Potter from Meiser because at one point it was Hefker. So therefore, in this case over here, when we say Zeb Zepeya, we don't necessarily mean, says Rava, that the Aniyim can collect from either one. We just mean that one of them, the Aniyim, are collecting from, the other one is in fact Potter from Meiser because it was designated originally as Peya, meaning, in other words, that now it's considered Hefker. So that's what it means, but not necessarily in fact that the Aniyim could collect from both places. Maybe in fact he would be entitled to sit there with a stick and prevent them from collecting from the other place, which would show that Ovid Inish didn't have an option. In the end, in a machlokas of Rav Nachman with another Amora, in this case Rav Yehuda, in a matter of Dinei Mamonos, the halacha is like Rav Nachman, and so it is over here. The halacha is like Rav Nachman, then Ovid Inish didn't have an option with all the criteria that we've said so far, that it had, and various other ones that I mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. It has to be that it's clear that you're in the right and the other guy is in the wrong, where you would be able to substantiate it and base it if necessary. It has to be that it has to be that what you're doing is actually going to either prevent a hezek right now or it's going to be preventing some kind of hezek now or in the future. Otherwise, it has to be that you're doing it, that it has to be that if there was an easy way to do it without causing the other guy a loss, then you have to do that first. And it has to be also another point they bring based on this Gemara, is it has to be that what you're doing is actually going to help your situation, not stam you're doing it because you're upset at the other guy. An example of that, again, involving parking, let's say somebody parks in your spot, you can't go put a sticker on his window, which then it's going to be a hassle for him to remove, because that's not going to, the fact is, right now, you don't have any parking space, that's not going to prevent him, so actually it depends, so if it's a one-time thing that he did that, then you have the right to do that, because that's not helping your situation, the fact is you still don't have your space. Either in that case, maybe you'd be allowed to call it. You might be allowed to call a tow truck because, again, Ovid Inish didn't have an option. But if he's doing it regularly, then you could say you can put a sticker on there, and that way that will tell him to stop doing it in the future. Because in that case, he's been doing it habitually, and in that case, the sticker will have an effect of preventing him from doing that for the future. Okay. Mishnah says, Nishbara Kadeh B'Shus Rabim. Suppose a person was walking in B'Shus Rabim with a jug full of water, and it broke. V'Huchlak Echad B'Mayim. Somebody else slipped on the water and then got injured by falling on the ground. Osha Loka B'Charsis. Or this other person got injured by the broken pieces of earthenware. Chayev, then the owner of the jug is Chayev to pay for those injuries, because he's the one who caused the burden there. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Miskaven Chayev, Ve'en Miskaven Potter. Rabbi Yehuda says it depends whether he had Kavana or not, and we're going to explain, and we're going to explain in the Gemara, that what we mean is Kavana means that he planned to get back this water and to get back these pieces of earthenware afterwards. He plans to use them for something. Broken pieces of earthenware sometimes in those days could be used for different purposes. So if he plans to do that, then so he wasn't master it, then Rabbi Yehuda is machayev. And the point is, the Gemara is going to end up explaining that when he tripped to begin with, it was an oinus, so Rabbi Yehuda is going to take the view, if the bird was created by oinus, then you can't be machayev him for it. Only if he still retains ownership of the broken pieces or of the water, then you can be machayev him. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. This is Rav Yehuda the Amora, not Rav Yehuda the Tana and the Mishnah. So Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Loshanu Elish Tinfu Kaleb Amayim. When we say that, when we say that the owner of the original jug, according to the Tana Kama, is Chayev, for the other person slipping in the water, only Elish Tinfu Kaleb Amayim, only if his clothes became dirty in the water, and therefore, so now he has to pay for the laundry bills, or there are Rishonim, we're talking about, let's say, clothing that can't be washed, where once it's like silk clothing or whatever, fine silk clothing, where once it got damaged, that's it, it's a goner. Rav Yehuda is saying, who acts made potter? If the person himself got injured by slipping on the water and banging himself on the ground, potter, then the owner of the jug would actually be potter, because kauka olam hezikatu, because then we can say it's really only the ground, which belongs to everybody, which is what injured him. Meaning, in other words, the water is basically only a grum. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta, we touched on it previously, when the Torah tells us you're chayev for a burr, that you dug a burr in somebody else's shirt or whatever fell into it, and you're chayev, on what grounds are you, and died, on what grounds are you the owner of the burr, the one who dug the burr, chayev exactly? You have Rav holds later in the Masechta, the primary thing is that because the burr has stale air in there, and therefore the animal suffocated. He says you can't be mechayev the person for the fact that the animal banged itself on the bottom of the burr, the sides of the burr, when it fell in, because that ground doesn't belong to you. It's karka olam. The only thing the Torah can be mechayev you on is havloi, is the stale air in the burr. So therefore, in the same vein, Rav is following his shita over here and saying you can't be mechayev Reuven for Shimon injuring himself on the ground, because the ground doesn't belong to Reuven. And over here, it was precipitated by Reuven's water on the ground. Nevertheless, that's only a grum. So therefore, in that case, only if the hezek was caused directly by the water, that his clothes became dirty from the water, then you can be mechayev him for that. Tosfos also points out that so you have to have, if he himself was injured in the water, fine, that would also be mechayev him, but the word huchlak implies that he slipped in the water, not that he was injured by the water. But yeah, obviously, if the water is something that could injure him, then yes, of course, then sure, he'd be chayev. Just the lashon of the mission has not mashma that. And if he was mechayev, and if he was mafkir everything, then he wouldn't be chayev for anything at all. So yeah. Then Rav Yehuda says, though, when I told this over to Shmuel, because after Rav died, after Rav passed away, Rav Yehuda became a Talmud of Shmuel, Omali says, I don't understand. Mechti, let's consider. Avnei Sakine Masoi, the concept where if a person puts a stone or a knife or a load in Rosh Hashanah and somebody else trips over it, where do we learn that he's chayev mi bode labanu? Ultimately, we learn it from the case of Bur. So then, any kind of burr, don't we have the rule that only if a shur, that if a shur was killed in it, then you chayev, but not if a person was killed in it? And when the pasuk says chamur, it means not kalim, means that if kalim fell into the burr and got damaged, then you potter. So on the other hand, Bahani Milil Indian Katola, and all of that only applies as far as death. So if a person fell into a burr and died, then the owner of the burr is potter. Aval Indian Nizakin, but when it comes to Nizakin, Odom Chayev Kalim Turim. If a person falls into a burr, then yes, the owner of the burr is Chayev for the injuries of the person, which in fact Rashi says, again, Shmuel is following his own shitta in that machlokas about the nature of the chiyuv of a burr, where Shmuel holds later on in the Masechta. Now, yes, you are chayev for chavtoi, for the fact that the animal, or whatever it is, banged against the sides of the burr. He doesn't consider this point about karka olam. So yes, if a person falls into the burr and gets injured, then yes, you're chayev for the person's injuries for kalim turim, and you'd still be potter from kalim. Well, then, in that case, because in the case of kalim, we say shvirosim zuhim yisosim, once the keli is broken, then in effect it's dead, and we're saying that, so therefore, by keli, in other words, there's no difference between injury and death. The point being, in other words, that according to Shmuel, so Shmuel is saying, so what do you mean that, if somebody slipped on the water and fell on the ground, he should be potter? Why? After all, you Reuven, to begin with, you dropped your barrel over there, you dropped your drug, and the water spilled, and the other person slipped on that water, and landed on the karka. Why should you, Reuven, be potter in the first place? So the point is, in other words, that Rav and Shmuel are arguing about what exactly happens over here. So if you have, you put some kind of obstacle in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and you weren't mafkir it, according to Rav, you are going to be chayev for nizakim of kalim. So in this case, he says, for example, if the other guy's clothes got dirty with the water, then you're going to be chayev to pay for him. But if the person himself banged himself on the ground, then you potter. And according to Shmuel, you should actually be potter for both. I skipped a line over here. So Rav would make the distinction. Sure, if you were mafkir the things, then we say that you can consider it like a burr, because a burr, you're chayiv only when you were mafkir the rishus and the burr itself. But if you didn't make them hefkum amoinu, then it is considered his mamon, and therefore then he should be chayiv. So now the bottom line is, when he wasn't mafkir it, Rav would say he's chayav for kalim and potter for adam, and according to Shmuel, he should be potter for the kalim regardless. But he's going to be chayav. On the contrary, he's going to be chayav for the adam. So when he was mafkir it, then Rav will agree that he's chayav for whatever happens because of this birth. So the Gemara says Masiv Rav Oshia. So Rav Oshia says, I have a contradiction. So Rashi learns like that, that Rav would hold that when you're chayim for the burr, when you're mafkir the reshus and the burr, Tosfos discusses that and discusses maybe not necessarily, if you mafkir the reshus and not the burr, then still you're obligated to remove the tekala, you're still obligated to fill in the burr or to cover it or something. Where you mafkir both the reshus and the burr, then when you dug the burr beheter and then you mafkir reshus and the burr, then maybe in fact you would be potter, says Tosfos. Anyway, so Mosi Rav Oshia, a braisa says that when it says in the pasuk "v'nafal shama shor chamur," it says that a shor chamur falls into the burr. So we learn from those words means shor v'le adam chamur v'le kelim. Mikan amru, based on this, the chachamim said "nafal secha shor v'kelav." If a shor carrying gear, for example, a yoke fell into the burr, the nishtabru, and the shur broke, and the yoke, or the shur died, and the kalim broke, or chamur v'kalav, or chamur and its gear went in there, and the kalim got ripped up. Rashi points out a shur carries solid things like a yoke, therefore the word is nishtabru. A donkey carries, for example, a saddle, which is more likely to get ripped. Anyway, the din is chayev al behema or potter al kalim. So he's chayev for the death of the animal. He's chayev for the death of the animal, but he's potter for the kalim because shor v'le adam chamur v'le kalim. And the braisa continues holam mazad doima. What is this like? It's like putting a stone or a knife or a burden in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and then causing damage. Where therefore he's chayev for the animal and potter for the kalim. So the Gemara just asks first, before we get to the question, there's a side question first. Adrama, why is the Braisa saying that the burr is like the Avnei Sakinu Masai? Adrama, Ma Doima Lozemi Boilai. The Braisa should be saying, what is like this? Because the burr, it says in the Pasuk, Avnei Sakinu Masai, it doesn't. So you're right. Ela my doimalazeh avnei sakinu masoy sheinichem rishus ram liziku. You're right. That's what the Braisa means. It means that what's similar to that would be a case of avnei sakinu masoy. Anyway, the Braisa says, l'fichach, therefore, and he tiach tzlechise be'evan, if somebody else banged his jar against the stone, so Reuven put a stone in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and Shimon walking along tripped and broke his bottle on the stone, then Reuven is going to be chayev to pay. So now the question is Reisha Kasha L'Rav. So the beginning of the Braisa is a difficulty on Rav, because we're saying that he's potter for Kalim. and the Braisa is not distinguishing whether he made it Hefker or not. And according to Rav, there should be that difference whether he made it Hefker or not. According to Rav, the fact that it's Mamonoi should make him Chayev, even for Kalim. Sefer Kasha L'Shmuel. And the Sefer of the Braisa has a question on Shmuel, because we're saying that if he tripped over the stone and broke his bottle, then we're saying he's chayev, because he wasn't master of the stone, so therefore he's chayev because of mamonoi, and so therefore he's chayev for kalim. And according to Shmuel, it doesn't matter whether he was master. He was saying whether he's master or not, he's always potter for kalim. So therefore, so it's a question on both of them. So the Gemara says, "Will be time meich." Well, according to your svara, that you're asking the question, "Tikshilach he gufa kasha reisha poter v'seifa chayev." Forget about that. Where you first deal with the question that in the braisa itself you have a contradiction between the reisha and the seifa. The reisha was saying he's poter for kalim because it's like a burr, and the seifa is saying he's chayev. Ella, obviously, the answer is Rav mataris the time meich or Shmuel mataris the time meich. Both Rav and Shmuel are going to have a way of explaining this braisa, and each one will have a way of explaining it according to his shita. Rav mataris the time meich. While Rav will explain according to his shita, it means we start off b'medron u'memoshef kiran. When is the first part of the braisa talking about that he's chayev for that he's potter for the kalim shef kiran, where he was master the burr or the stone or whatever. So then in that case we have the din of burr avaloi hef kiran. But if you didn't declare them hefker, then it's mamonai, therefore chayev. So therefore we'd be chayev even for kalim, the same way as for shur or whatever causes damage to kalim. Lefichach, and because of that, if therefore somebody else breaks a bottle by tripping on the stone, chayev, then the other guy's going to be chayev. So that works out according to Rav, that Rav is saying that the difference between whether he made them hefker or not, and we do have that implied in the braisa. Ushmuel matarit the taimei. Shmuel will say that Shmuel will also explain the braisa according to his shita, because he's going to say hashda de amrit avnei sakinu masoi kaburi domi. Now that you're saying that avnei sakinu masoi are the equivalent of a burr, because that's what the braisa said, so then it comes out l'Rav Yehuda mechayv al nizke kelim b'burr. So then only according to Rav Yehuda the Tana, who says later on in the Masechta that you are chayev for kalim and a burr. He doesn't learn the drasha from shor v'le'odim come over like kalim in the same way as we're going to learn later on in the Masechta. So he would say, you are chayev for kalim, so according to him, lepichach, he tiach tlichisa be'evin chayev. So therefore, if somebody else broke a bottle by tripping over the stone, then Rabbi Yehuda would be mechayev. So according to Shmuel, the end of the Brai says only according to Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, this that we're talking about, breaking the bottle, so Rabbi Elazar says, lo shanu elosh nitkal be'evin, v'nishrek be'evin. The case would be only when the other person tripped on the stone and then dropped the bottle, and this bottle fell against the stone itself and broke. Aval nitkal b'karka, but if the other person tripped over something else on the ground, v'nishrek be'evin, and the bottle broke on the stone, potter, then he would be potter, because then it's not the stone that caused the hezek in the first place, because then he tripped over something else on the ground, and then therefore, and then that's what precipitated everything. Tosfos points out that if he had tripped over the stone and the bottle broke against the character, then again we would say it's the character that caused the damage, and he would also be potter. So the Gemara says, "Kaman." Now, who would that be like? Deloike Rav Nosson. Apparently, that would not be like Rav Nosson. We've learned before, and we're going to learn in more detail later in the Masechta. You have a case where a shur pushes another shur into a burr, and the second shur gets killed. So Rav Nosson holds that the owner of the shur, the owner of the first shur, is entitled to a certain, is required to pay a certain amount of the nezek, but not all of it, because it didn't cause the complete death of the animal. So it's paying one quarter of the nezek, half of the case is the shur was a tam, and therefore normally it would pay chatzi nezek, and here it's paying a quarter of the nezek. What happens to the other three quarters? Rav Nosson holds that you can collect them from the owner of the burr, because the burr is in fact what caused damage. So in other words, in effect, Rav Nosson says, I'm going to the owner of the shur, I'm collecting from him whatever I can. You, the owner of the burr, are responsible for the rest of it. Well, the same thing over here. If the other person tripped over on the ground and the bottle broke on the stone, so you should say that the owner of the stone should be chayev for everything, because the owner of the bottle should say, look, I can't collect anything from the owner of the ground, because the v'neder shasarabim, there's no particular owner. So whatever I can't collect from them, I need to collect from you. So therefore, you should be chayev. So Rabbi Elazar's din then would not work according to Rav Nosson. Ikadami, others say, Amar Rabbi Elazar, loy tema v'nitkal v'evin v'nishif v'evin. Don't think that it's only when he tripped over the stone and the bottle broke against the stone that he would be chayev. But you would think to say that if he tripped on the ground and it broke against the stone, and it broke against the stone, then the owner of the stone should be potter. No, says Rav Elazar, even if he tripped over the ground, over something else on the ground, and then he, and then the bottle broke on the stone, either way, the owner of the stone is going to be chayev, keman k'rav Nosson, and that would indeed fit with Rav Nosson's opinion. That indeed would fit with Rav Nosson's opinion, who says that because you can't collect from the owners of the character, therefore you can collect whatever you can't collect from them, you can collect from the owner of the stone. The owner of the stone can't say that, look, it was precipitated by you tripping over the character, and it's not my problem. So no, we don't say that, actually. So that's it. So then in that case, the owner of the stone would be chayev. And again, Tosfos discusses over here what happens the other way around. If he tripped over the stone and then banged the bottle on the ground, then for sure the owner of the stone is going to be potter, because then the bottle broke on the karka olam, and the stone is only considered the grama. Okay.